evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Wednesday, October 21st, 2015. South Sudanese church leaders say foreigners can advise the leaders of the warring parties, but the solution to the conflict is in the hands of South Sudanese.
People outside can encourage us, but if we don't accept one another, we don't admit our mistakes, we don't apologize to one another, we don't want to reconcile, no matter what the Americans, the British, or the Norwegians, or the Europeans, or the African Union will do, they will do nothing.
And Bor residents say the town will never be safe after Ugandan troops finish pulling out of the state capital.
They would have remained as part of the peacekeeping, for they know the history, what happened in South Sudan. And of course, we shall bridge the gap, but there will be a space.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Committee for National Healing, Peace and Reconciliation says the two warring parties in South Sudan have yet to fully commit themselves to implement the peace deal signed in August. As Waki Simon Wudu reports from Juba, the commission confirms that deadly fighting continues in parts of the country.
The committee says little has been implemented since the peace agreement was signed by President Salva Kiir and rebel leader Riek Machar. Archbishop Daniel Deng Bol of the Episcopal Church of South Sudan and Sudan, who also chairs the committee, told the reporters at a Juba news conference today that fear and mistrust still dominate decisions being made by leaders in the government and the SPLM in opposition, and that leads to more fighting.
Violation is there. Yes, we are hearing killings. Is there?
At the same time, Archbishop Bol says the two sides have taken some steps in the right direction, such as engaging in security talks and surveying zones for the demilitarization of Juba. Bishop Enoch Tombe, a member of the committee who also took part in the peace talks on behalf of faith-based organizations, says it does not help that funding for the Commission on Monitoring and Evaluation has been delayed. But Bishop Tombe says the biggest problem is that the leaders of both sides have not taken full ownership of the agreement.
You know, people outside can encourage us, but if we don't ourselves accept one another, we don't admit our mistakes, we don't apologize to one another, we don't want to reconcile, no matter what the Americans, the British, or the Norwegians, or the Europeans, or the African Union will do, they will do nothing.
Fighting flared up within days of the signing of the peace deal, especially in Unity State. The UN says both sides are guilty of violating the ceasefire. Eight agencies in recent weeks have suspended aid operations in southern and central Unity State, citing renewed conflict between the two parties as the reason for withdrawing their personnel. Tombe says more effort is required on the part of the government and the armed opposition, as well as the international community, to ratchet up implementation of the agreement.
We are appealing to both parties to implement the agreement and also to civil society to own the agreement, as there can be no more delays.
The Healing, Peace and Reconciliation Committee was formed by Mr. Kiir in April 2013. It was tasked with leading a nationwide mobilization campaign for peace and reconciliation at the grassroots level between communities. Bol says his National Healing, Peace and Reconciliation Committee is ready to turn over its responsibilities to the newly established Commission for Truth, Reconciliation and Healing, but says the work of the committee to reconcile South Sudanese communities on a people-to-people basis will go on under the Council of Churches. For VOA News, I am Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
In neighboring Jonglei State, Ugandan troops have begun to pull out of the capital, Bor. The withdrawal of foreign troops from South Sudan is a key provision of the peace deal signed in August. While many residents welcome the move, some fear there will be a security vacuum after Ugandans go. Jacob Achek reports for VOA from Bor.
The Ugandan flag was lowered and the South Sudan flag raised at a farewell ceremony for the Ugandan People Defense Force or UPDF soldiers yesterday at the barrack 7 kilometers from Bo town. What has been a UPDF barrack for nearly 2 years was then handed over to the SPLA Division 8. South Sudan military officers who attended the ceremony presented gifts to the Ugandan troops to show appreciation for the role the UPDF played in securing Bor and other parts of Jonglei State during South Sudan's 20-month conflict. SPLA Deputy Chief of Staff for Administration, General Malwal Ayom Dor, says among the gifts were
one bull, and two heifers, President Museveni. And this bull was white bulls and white cows, the symbol of Jonglei State. And as you know, our white cows are not just given for the sake of giving. Very difficult to give our bull, or we give all in the history of Jonglei.
Jonglei State's Information Minister Judy Jonglei Boyre says the withdrawal of the Ugandan troops is a step toward implementing the peace agreement that President Kiir and armed opposition leader Riek Machar signed in August.
Implementation of the peace agreement is not long around the corner, but it is in our homes now.
The peace deal called for the state security actors allied to the government or Machar's SPLM in opposition movement to withdraw from South Sudan within 45 days of signing of the deal. President Kiir signed the agreement on August 26, the last of the warring parties to do so. Ugandan troops that were deployed in Western Equatorial State before South Sudan erupted in conflict in December 2013 do not have to withdraw from South Sudan under the term of agreement. Those forces are there to help in the fighting against armed groups like the Lord's Resistance Army. Bor resident Jacob Kwany says he does not want the Ugandan troops to leave the area.
I think there will be a vacuum, because if it was my understanding, they would have remained as part of the peacekeeping, for they know the history, what happened in South Sudan. And of course, we shall bridge the gap, but there will be a space. During the conflict, they really came in and they helped the Ugandan and the civilian of South Sudan, who were really caught in fighting.
Kwany says the presence of the UPDF in Bor has made the town more secure. Bor was the scene of heavy fighting earlier on in the conflict, but has been largely stable and secure for the past 20 months. Ugandan troops were deployed in Bor just days after fighting erupted in Juba in mid-December 2013. General Dor, who is also the commander of SPLA operations in Jonglei State, insists the withdrawal of UPDF from Jonglei State will not affect security in the state.
The SPLA went to the north, they went to Ayud, went to Poptap, even went as far as Ayud.
According to the peace deal, a joint integrated police force, the size and compositions of which was supposed to be determined a works force in Addis Ababa last month, will be in charge of security in Bor and several other towns. After the UPDF completed its withdrawal, a big UN peacekeeping force, which the UN Security Council has mandated to use any means necessary to protect civilians and stop violence, will help to keep town like Bor safe and peaceful. For VOA News, I'm Jacob Achek in Bor.
Some details are emerging about the South Sudanese man captured by the Libyan faction of the terrorist group known as the Islamic State of Iraq and Syria, or ISIS. A video released last weekend shows what appears to be the same South Sudanese man kneeling with his hands tied behind his back while a man with a knife stands next to him. A top South Sudanese official has confirmed the victim's identity to be Kwol Goy of Warab State. Ayen Bior reports.
South Sudan Foreign Affairs Minister Barnaba Marial was shocked to hear the news that a citizen of his country had been captured and killed by a terrorist. The Ministry of Foreign Affairs is condemning the attack in Libya and says it's working with security officials to collect information about the abduction and murder of Kwol Goy. Morales says Goy was missing for at least 4 days before the video surfaced on Sunday.
Our embassy in Cairo, which is also a non-resident ambassador to Libya, actually sent us the message as a result of other South Sudanese who are working in Libya and brought the sad news that Kwol Goy worked from Gogrial, Warab State, is of the Twitch from Kwaj section, was beheaded by ISIS in Benghazi, and he's married, the deceased is married, and has children.
Marial says his government is working with security officials in Libya and Egypt to find the body and learn more details about the terrorist group responsible for the attack. An audio and video analyst in the United States says intelligence officials will analyze every frame of the video to collect more information. Paul Ginsberg, president of Professional Audio Labs in New Jersey, says the video file will be beneficial in learning the identity of the terrorist. He says intelligence officials are likely to also study verbal similarities between the recent video and other videos released by ISIS.
They have certain teams that are looking at the words, the letters, the words, the phrase count, anything embedded in the voice. They're doing spectral analysis of the voice to catalog to see whether it's compatible with any other recordings that were made. They're looking at the actual voice, his vocabulary, inflection, how quickly he's speaking, any slang, any mispronunciation, accents, speech impediments, anything that would make the voice unique and is noteworthy.
Ginsberg says they will also study the video's digital file for more clues about when it was created and where it was videotaped. He says even the smallest clue can help investigators find motive. But Mariel says he is convinced the killing was to avenge South Sudan for allegedly mistreating Muslims in the country.
Which is not true. There is no record of any persecution of Muslims in the Republic of South Sudan. Both Christians and Muslims, they live side by side, even within the same families. So the reason for his killing, this cruel and barbaric killing, is really unjustified by all means.
Mariel says his government has already begun the process of evacuating South Sudanese citizens from Libya. He says the South Sudanese embassy in Cairo is communicating with the Egyptian and Tunisian governments to accommodate South Sudanese who feel their lives are in danger in Libya.
And then the government will decide to see how we can evacuate them with the help of Egypt, since Egypt's presence is quite well established in Libya. So the government now, we are waiting for the statistics, the list of the names of all the families from South Sudan who are still in Libya.
And Mariel says they are also asking some of their international partners if they can assist South Sudan in evacuating its citizens out of Libya. He says his government is working with South Sudanese citizens in Libya who want to travel back to South Sudan. For VOA News, I'm Ian Bior in Washington.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, a company does its part to offset high prices of food commodities in Wau. More on that story when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
if you just won a lot of money in a lottery, would you quit your job?
Definitely, I will not quit my job, because when you quit your jobs because of the money that you have won, within the process of life, you will spend that money. And when you spend that money, it may end.
I will continue with my work because that is my field. Money can never stop me from my field work.
Yeah, I would quit my job because I will start business. I will look for a profitable business.
If I am like doing a job which I earn a lot of money, then I don't think I would quit it. But if it's a job that I was doing for the sake of, you know, trying to survive, then yes, I would quit it.
Definitely, I can quit because when I'm working to get money. Get that money in one time, I can definitely go away and do something.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. Officials in Wau say gunmen attacked Momoi village in Busheri Payam last night, touching several houses. Eyewitnesses say no one was killed in the attack, but many residents lost everything they own. 35-year-old Rita Adriano Ubura is a mother of 10 who lives in Momoi village. Speaking in her native Balanda about the incident, she says that at about 1 o'clock in the morning, three men came to her house asking for her husband.
We heard them knocking at our door and they broke it and started to threaten us at gunpoint to keep quiet. There were three of them who came. Only one of them had a gun. And when they reached the other house in which our children were sleeping, they started to set it on fire. Thank God I was able to beg them to allow me to bring my children outside.
Adriano says at least six houses in a building where the villagers kept all of the year's harvest were burned to the ground.
We lost more than 20 stalks of groundnuts and more than 10 stalks of sorghum, including our clothes and my children's school material. My son is doing some small business and he had items like soap, sugar and salt. All these things have been burnt. Now we are left with nothing at all, not even a cup with which to drink water.
Another eyewitness, 32-year-old Simon Peter, says his two-room house was also torched last night. Peter says someone pointed a gun at him when he went outside to see what was going on. He says the gunman tried to shoot him, but he was able to escape. But Peter says the attackers burned down his home, leaving him with nothing. He says the attack has left people in the village very scared. The attack is the latest of several violent incidents in the area in the last few days. On Saturday, unknown gunmen killed a school watchman in a nearby village, and 2 days ago, loggers, including a Ugandan, went missing in Abshaka Payam, just a few kilometers from Momoe village. Newly appointed Wau County Commissioner Anthony Father Obor says rebels loyal to Riek Machar are responsible for the recent violence.
We are considering these two incidents as the action of rebels, and it is the first kind to happen in the area. And we as a government, we are suspecting they want to assassinate people.
But a spokesman for Machar, James Gadet, denies the allegations. Gadet says all rebel forces are observing the ceasefire that took effect at the end of August.
We haven't received reports of such activities. What I know is that our forces have been directed to observe the permanent ceasefire, that the war has come to an end. So there is no any operations carried out by our forces anywhere in the country. So this is a false allegation.
Gadet acknowledges that the rebel forces are in Western Bahr El Ghazal state, but insists they are not involved in any attacks.
This could be a separate incident. They could be discontented civilians which have their own grievances, but they are not our forces. They are not under our control or our leadership.
Commissioner Obor says forces are being deployed to patrol the area to prevent more violence. That report was prepared by Michael Atid in Wau and Lucy Pony in Nairobi. A company in Juba has delivered several tons of food to Wau and is selling it at an affordable price. The aim is to help people in the area to cope with the skyrocketing prices of basic commodities, and the company, Uncle Amin Akasha, is doing that by using letters of credit the way they are intended to be used. As Dimo Silva Aurelio reports from Wau, the program is already having a positive impact.
The company, Uncle Amin Akasha, has already shipped several tons of food items to Wau, and more is on the way. The food supplies currently in Wau are enough to feed people in Western Bahr El Ghazal and parts of Awil and Warab estates, says Amin Akasha's manager in Wau, James Lomoro.
Actually, in the sacks, like the sorghum, we have 8,000 sacks, and the wheat flour, and the maize flour, I mean, the one is 10 kg, we have like 10,000 sacks. The one is 25 kg, we have like 500 sacks. The one with 50 kg, we have like 1,100 sacks.
Lomoro says the food is brought in from Uganda. He says that even though the cost of importing the essential foodstuffs are high, Amin Akasha is determined to sell the foods at prices that ordinary citizens can afford. For example, Amin Akasha sells a 10-kilogram bag of maize flour that would cost 150 South Sudanese pounds in a town market for 85 South Sudanese pounds. A 50-kilogram bag of maize flour, which costs 700 South Sudanese pounds in the market, will be sold by Amin Akasha for 450 South Sudanese pounds, Lomoro says. Some residents in Wau say they can no longer afford to provide 2 meals a day for their children. And even government employees say their monthly salary is only enough to buy one bag of maize flour, which only lasts a few days. A majority of government employees in Wau earn around 500 South Sudanese pounds per month, less than the market price of a sack of maize flour. Lomoro says more help is on the way for local residents.
We have in the way sugar, and we have oil, we have milk, Al-Mutish mark, and we have also rice, 20 kg, and we have also wheat flour, it's called Akasha. This on the way will come here.
Lomoro says Amin Akasha aims to ensure that South Sudanese citizens who have been hard hit by the current economic crisis are able to at least get enough to eat until the economy improves. Widow Catherine Laura takes care of her 6 children on her own.
Prices change every day, and it is very hard for me as a widow to look after my children because one hand can't clap on its own.
But Laura says the Amin Akasha initiative has helped to make her difficult task a little easier. Amin Akasha is able to sell food at reduced prices because the government has issued several letters of credit or LCs to the company. LCs allow a company to buy US dollars at the official central bank rate of around 3 South Sudanese pounds to $1. That represents a saving of 600% over the current black market rate, which is around 18 pounds to the dollar. Letters of credit are supposed to be used the way Amin Akasha is using them, to import commodities that are paid for in dollars and then sell them at prices that ordinary people can afford. But many merchants say the system is ripe with corruption and millions of dollars in LCs have been used to line the pockets of unscrupulous officials and traders instead of benefiting the people of South Sudan. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Wau.
From Wau, we move to Western Equatorial State where people are going hungry. The deputy governor of Western Equatorial says 12 people have starved to death over the past week in Greater Mundri counties. This comes 2 weeks after Army spokesman Colonel Philip Aguer said the government was battling a group of gunmen in the area. VOA fellow Tito Justin has more.
Deputy Governor Bulena Biatara says 8 people died in Mundiri East and 4 in Mundiri West. He says most of the victims were hiding in the bush because of all fighting in the area. Biatara says others still hiding in the bush are at a risk of dying of starvation or diseases such as typhoid or malaria. He says state authorities are trying to help those living in the affected area, but they need help. Abiatara says the state has formed a committee to assess the conditions of the people hiding in the bush.
But we are trying our best to send a team of inter-church committee to move down there and assess the situation of the people, so they are going together with some humanitarian agencies. There the team has been formed and will be moving down there and give us an accurate report.
The spokesperson for the United Nations mission in South Sudan, Ariane Cantel, says the humanitarian conditions of those living in Mundiri are dire. She says enemies could not confirm the number of people who have died. Thousands of the people displaced are fleeing the area due to insecurity. More than 1,000 have arrived in Yei Municipality this week and are taking shelter in Muru Congregation Church in Yei Municipality. Santo Paulo Lasoba is the mayor of Yei Municipality.
There are house families which are more than 200 house families. The numbers ranging to 1,400 and plus. They have come to the municipality and we are starting registering them this morning. And we are going to put them in one assembling area so that they will be having times of help.
Paul says most of the people feeling Mundiri are helpless.
It's really a scary situation because people are very vulnerable. Most of them are children and women. And to flee from Mundiri up to Yei is a long distance. And needs a very urgent intervention from the government and the humanitarian organization also.
Paul says fighting in Mundiri between SPLA forces and gunmen has been occurring since last month. For VOA News, I am Tito Justin in Washington.
Yeah. You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here is a recap of our today's top stories with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Damme.
Thanks, John. The head of the South Sudan Committee for National Healing, Peace and Reconciliation says the two warring parties have yet to fully commit themselves to implementing the peace deal signed in August, and he confirms that fighting continues in parts of the country. Archbishop Daniel Den Bull of the Episcopal Church of South Sudan and Sudan says little has been done since the peace deal was signed by President Salva Kiir and rebel leader Riek Machar. Archbishop Deng says fear and mistrust still dominate decisions being made by both sides. He also acknowledges that some steps have been taken in the right direction, such as engaging in security talks and surveying zones for the demilitarization of Juba. Ugandan troops are withdrawing from the Jonglei state capital of Bor. Many local residents and officials welcome the move, but some fear that insecurity will return after the Ugandans' departure. In a ceremony today, the area that had been the UPDF barracks for nearly 2 years was officially returned to the SPLA's Division 8. South Sudanese military officers presented gifts to the Ugandan troops to show South Sudan's appreciation for their help in securing Bor and other parts of Jonglei state during South Sudan's 20-month-long conflict. And finally, a beheading of a South Sudanese man has been confirmed in Libya. A video released last weekend by ISIS shows what appears to be that same South Sudanese man kneeling with his hands tied behind his back while a masked man stands next to him wielding a knife. South Sudan's foreign minister has condemned the terrorist attack and confirmed the victim's identity to be Kual Gwoy of Warup State. Benjamin Mariel says he was shocked to learn a citizen of his country was captured and killed by a terrorist. He condemned the attack and says the Ministry of Foreign Affairs is working with security officials to collect information about the abduction and murder of Kual Gwoy in Libya and Egypt. Gwoy was missing for at least 4 days before the video surfaced on Sunday, according to Mariel. Mariel says his government is working with security officials in Libya and Egypt to find the body and to learn more details about the terrorist group that is responsible for the attack. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Damme.
Thanks, Carol, and that's a very, very terrible news. That brings us to the end of our news for this Wednesday. We now leave you with the song Akulugurush Tanas by Isaka Number One.
Hey, a la capella musica. Akulugurush nasi kumita biga tarazi ne. Baba sukiya nasi kumasi biga abakalamda ke.
Ah, Anania, it's a bigger command today. Kaba sudereja uncle.
Akulugurush nasi kumita biga tarazi ne. Baba sukiya nasi kumasi biga abakalamda ke.
Balin, Ashan Balin Biga Indo Arabia. Ita Bibada Fekir Ketira Shanibio Arabia Kamani. Ita Maroko Balin Igu Arabia Demeteri Gayatu. Ita Bibada Kabasunas Ashanibio Arabia Kaman. Matainu Alfonso Ashan Alfonso Biga Indo Studio. Ita Bibada Fekir Ketir Ashanibio Kamera Kaman. Ita Maroko Alfonso Liko Gurushu Demeteri Gayatu. Itabi bada kabasuna sushilu gurusu tanasaki.
Eh, lawe kabasu yaba, silu gurusa yaba, lawe mabainu chane. Eh, tini ya mazeje ya kuta ilawe.
Hayande mazede, simu kabasa ya sabi. Hayande mazede, simu wakulu gurusu tanasi. Ayande masende, simbu kabasa ya sabi. Ayande masende, simbu wakulukuru stana si.
Hey, mama Safira Rasulu Lukusang Sankereji Budawa Lejena. Hey, Lukusang silu gurus, Lukusang waduru takulukulu. Wale Lukusang wale gurus. Debi Kelimusunu.
We have been listening to Isaka Number One with the song Akulugurush Tanas. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thank you for allowing us into your homes and vehicles. Please join us tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.